It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know that's
the Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And I am joined for the pregame report for the Jets and the Bengals, as well as some more questions to answer with a guy who has been in hiding lately. Hasn't been around, but he has emerged. He's got a trip coming up in a couple of days. But before he goes off, he wanted to answer some questions and talk a little bit of film, because there's been a real demand to hear what he thinks about some of these things going on around the Jets. Of course, talking about Mr. Joe Blewett. Joe, what's going on, buddy? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, about 3-4 weeks, I think, since I've done my own podcast or appeared on another podcast. So kind of on weighing what to do in the future, but for now, to jump on the podcast with you and answer some questions, I think it's definitely going to be fun, especially what's happened over the last few weeks with the Jets. So,
Joe, we've got a ton of questions, and I want to get to them all, but first I want to talk about keys to the game. This is a weird game because, honestly, the Bengals are so bad in so many areas. Very few areas are they even above average. In fact, anything where they're not at the absolute bottom would be considered a success for them this season. You go through and look, team defense, they're the worst in the league in terms of defending the run. They're one of the worst in the league in terms of defending the pass. And by one of the worst, I mean their bottom third, which is still good by their standards. The only area where the Bengals actually have done fairly well is not allowing that many sacks. But the problem is, that's only because if you go back and look at the film, the Bengals quarterbacks have gotten the ball out so fast because they've had no choice. So there's really not a lot here for the Bengals. The key to me here, Joe, is whether or not the Jets start feeling themselves a little too much, going to Cincinnati a little too confident, let up, and then the Bengals come in there and beat them. Andy Dalton hasn't had the best year of his career. He's always kind of been somewhere right in the middle in terms of starting quarterbacks. Not bad, not great, somewhere in between. He's back in the lineup, which I think is a positive for the Bengals, because he's definitely a better quarterback, at least right now, than Finley. So I think if the Jets can find a way to just keep him in check, which shouldn't be too difficult, and make sure that Tyler Boyd doesn't get out and make any explosive plays, there's not going to be a lot that the Bengals can do on offense. Their running game has been terrible this year. Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard have been averaging under 4 yards a carry. Neither one of them has done well this year on defense. Like I said, their passing defense has been bottom third. Their run defense has been the absolute worst in the league. So Sam Darnold should be able to do well. And I think the combination of Bell and Bilal Powell, who has emerged the last couple of weeks, getting some carries, should be fine. Like I said, Joe, I think the huge key to this game, above all else, is whether or not the Jets get too cocky. Because if they come in there and play anything like they've played the last couple of weeks, it should be a fairly comfortable victory for them.
Yeah, you touched on a lot there, and I could probably go for an hour because I'm just excited to talk again. It's not like I don't, miss film and miss talking football, because that's just in my blood. So I'll try to contain myself a little bit. But yeah, you're right. And this is like the classic game that back in the Rex era, back in the Todd Bowles era, where the Jets win a game or two in a row, which didn't happen too often. But when it did, they would come out and throw a stinker up. So you're really hoping to see the Jets continue to do what they've been doing. And, obviously seeing Dalton back, at the quarterback position for the Bengals, he's a little bit more of a threat than Ryan Finley is. I don't think Dalton's a guy who's going to kill us like a Lamar Jackson will in a few weeks, most likely. And you spoke about them getting rid of the ball quickly, and that's why they don't allow, a lot of hits, a lot of sacks. But that obviously, you know, bodes well for the Jets with one, their cornerbacks who, you know, I'm sure we've got questions about them. They've been playing well, but having them in simple cover two roles, cloud corner type roles, is going to be good for them. They can get aggressive at the line, press guys. And if the ball does get out of Dalton's hand quickly, obviously those guys have shown the ability to tackle more blessed Austin than Mollett, who missed a few, you know, tackles, but he still is a very willing tackler. And obviously you have Marcus May out there, you have Jamal Adams out there, guys who can tackle. So that bodes well for the Jets. And in terms of attacking, you know, their defense, I think it's pretty simple. Don't turn the ball over. Run the ball. I think this is the first game where Le'Veon Bell is probably going to get 100 plus yards, which would be nice to see, because you've heard some criticism about him, which I think is a lot unwarranted. I think he's been doing a really good job this season, but obviously with the Jets, and if you look at the stats, and I'm sure Nani has touched on this, that if you look at how quickly he's contacted frequently behind the line of scrimmage, I think he's like number one in the NFL in terms of basically not having running room. So I don't think it's really him. I think it's the offensive line. I still think he's been playing pretty well, where, you know, he's still is turning gains that should be negative 2 yards, negative 1 yards, you know, 0 yards, 1 yard into 3 or 4 yards, which is a big difference. So I think this game is the game to take advantage of that Bengals linebacking core. It's not really the defensive line that's playing that bad for them. So with the running game, I'd like to see more outside zone, more trap type plays to have, you know, Dunlap and Geno Atkins, who are still very capable players, you know, attack hard upfield. And either trap them, or if you are going to run more zone, which the Jets do, you know, run more mid zone, inside zone, tight zones, make sure you stay on those double teams to the linebackers. You know, you really want to handle Atkins and Dunlap before moving to the linebackers, because if you get those guys blocked up, I'm sure that Le'Veon Bell can break a tackle or two, you know, to get, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, plus yards, because those linebackers are really not good for the Bengals right now at all. And then, you know, in terms of passing on them as well, you know, I think the run game is going to set that up. Play action, that play action is going to affect the linebackers if they're running effectively on them. This isn't a game where Darnold's needed to force any balls. There's a lot of talk about that throw last week, which in my honest opinion, and I always have been honest with you guys when I've spoke to you guys, is should he have thrown that ball? No, most likely not. If the cornerback doesn't keep run, or if the cornerback keeps running with Robbie Anderson instead of stopping and he's actually matching him, it could be a pass deflection, even an interception. It's a really ballsy throw by Darnold. So should if you just scramble it forward for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 yards? Yes, you probably should have, but that's kind of what you get with Darnold. But I don't want to see throws like that from him this week. Just take what's there, throw the ball out of bounds, which he did last week, which is a positive. Control the game through that ground game. And then in terms of defending them, the pressure packages they've been getting there, they've been getting home the last couple of weeks, hoping to see Jamal Adams get what, 2 sacks this week to break the record. And then have a lot of focus on Tyler Board. He's really the only concern I have on that team. Cone him, bracket him, double him, whatever you need to do. Take him out of the game and make Andy Dalton beat you with the other backup type receivers that they have on the roster that I'm not really concerned about. So I think if the Jets don't beat themselves, they should win this game. And it's a big game. You know, listen, a lot of people are assuming the Jets are going to win this game, but this is a classic game that the Jets go on the road, they lose after they're feeling themselves. Let's see if a lot of the talk in the locker room this last week, okay, you know, we know we're on a three-game winning streak, but we're still 4-7. Let's see if that actually comes into play when they play the Bengals, because if they play like they did the last couple of weeks against the, you know, the Raiders and the Redskins, they should be able to handle this game easily. And like I said before the season, Scott, I have a couple of $100 on the Jets winning 7 games, which is looking like a realistic possibility now. So I really, really, really need the Jets to win this game, which I think they will. I just hope they aren't feeling themselves too much, like you said.
Joe, we just talked about the keys to the game, so now let's get into the questions, and there are many of them. We will start with Felix Walper, listening all the way in Germany. He says, Joe, are you going to record 10 hours of material? Because in terms of your film analysis, I feel like a smoker who is forced to quit cold turkey. He also says, what is up with Quinnen Williams? Do you think he could become the next Leonard Williams? So, Joe, I'm going to let you answer this. But first, I want to remind everybody that if you haven't had a chance to listen to Jamal Westerman talk about this, or to Chris Nimley and I talk about this on a previous mailbag, we explained a lot about what we think is going on. A lot of it involves his usage and the fact that he's being used on stunting and two-gapping on 80 to 90% of the plays. At least that's what I've seen. Joe, I know you've been watching this stuff, and a lot of people have been been waiting to hear from you on this. What are you seeing? Do you see what we see? Is there something else that you're missing? Do you think that Quinnen is not performing up to potential, or is it a scheme and a usage issue in terms of what Greg Williams is doing? What do you think?
Yeah, so to address the first part of that question with 10 hours of film review, I'm not sure about anytime soon. Maybe not. But I may make it up to you in the off season with a few things. I don't think I'm going to be gone for good. I've been cold turkey for 3-4 weeks and it's really eating at me already. So I'm sure I'll be back in some capacity. So don't worry about that. But with Quinnen Williams, yeah, you're pretty much right there. He's the penetrator instead of the looper on a lot of these on a lot of these stunts that Greg Williams likes to run. He's two gapping a lot. And people are worried about it. And, you know, to be very honest and very upfront with people, do would I have liked to see him produce more? Yes, that undoubtedly would I have liked to see him make a few more plays. No doubt about it. But at the same time, am I worried about him? No, not at all. We saw it in the first play or one of the first plays against the Raiders game where he blew up. I think it's Rodney Hudson's the center for the Raiders, but it was very evident even watching on broadcast. I didn't watch the film, but he blew him up like 3-4 yards into the backfield. And he's a young kid. He's 21, 22 years old. He's one of the youngest defensive linemen in the NFL. And just look at the Jets defensive line, you know, as a kind of like a measuring stick for what can happen year two. What was Fadu Kassi last year? Nothing. What was Nathan Shepard last year? Nothing, you know? So let's not get too crazy about Quinnen Williams, who's been asked to, you know, kind of do something that he's not necessarily used to doing. And Alabama is a penetrator. When you're a penetrator, you have more ability to take advantage of your hand usage, getting by guys and you know, just penetrating that one gap to get to the quarterback and it tackles for a loss. But when you're asked to hold up multiple guys, asked to hold two gaps, you're not going to produce as much. So Greg Williams is the type of coach who is not going to really play to one guy, maybe other than Jamal Adams, who's been blitzing a lot, and he was blitzing a little bit more at the end of the game to get Jamal Adams some sacks. But for the most part, he's a guy who is going to stick to his system. And in his system right now, he wants and he trusts Quinnen Williams to be the two gapper to stuff the line to allow other guys to be freed up. So I would like to see a little bit more production, but I'm not worried about it. He's still is young. He still has to gain strength. I think going into the year he produced a lot at Alabama, he had to gain like 30 pounds to get to 300. So he's still, you know, not necessarily a heavier D tackle. So when you're asking a not as heavy D tackle with, or nose tackle, whatever you want to call him, I would call him more of a D tackle, to hold up against those guys and, you know, stuff the line, it's going to be a little more difficult for him to produce and get off those blocks than it would be a guy like Brandon Williams for the Ravens, who's like 340 pounds. So don't go crazy. He's been doing just fine. Just don't buy into the Twitter, which I've rarely been on. It's kind of nice. I'm sure there's a lot of people, oh, well, Quinnen Williams isn't producing anything. You know, he sucks. Get rid of him. So another Leonard Williams, it's way too early to say. Would I guess that he's going to be another Leonard Williams? No, but let's not also just think that Leonard Williams is a bad player because he's not. It takes a little bit more film study, a little bit more knowledge to know about defensive tackles, their roles, and why guys are or aren't producing. When I've heard a lot about Ed Oliver already. Should have taken him, but he's not asked to two gap. They play an attacking 4-3 scheme, so it's a little bit different, the roles they're asked to do. So don't go crazy. That's what I'm going to say.
That's what Chuck Smith said. He said that if you put Quinnen Williams in a 4-3 scheme and you had an edge rusher to go with him, then Quinnen Williams would basically be Fletcher Cox, which I think is a fair assessment. I also think that a lot of why Greg Williams is doing what he's doing is to make up for the fact that he has such a huge deficiency at inside linebacker. Quinnen Williams is basically covering a lot of that territory by taking on so many of those blockers. And so I think when C.J. Mosley and Avery Williamson, but especially when C.J. Mosley comes back, we may see him use Quinnen Williams to attack a little bit more. Do you think that's fair?
Oh yeah, 100% true. Yeah, it's true. When you're two gapping, you're really asking the defensive lineman to do you know, more in terms of the run game, where if they're penetrating a lot and the defensive linemen are blocked out of the play, you're really putting a lot more emphasis on those linebackers to secure those tackles. So asking guys to be a little bit more cautious and be responsible for two gaps, you're putting less emphasis on those linebackers. So with the run game, that's, you know, it's very true. And then with the pass rush, it's true as well. where if they had a legit edge threat, they wouldn't have to run all these stunts and put Quinton Williams, you know, as a penetrator, you know, long legging, taking up two guys, where he'll be asked to do more of what he did at Alabama, which is, you know, show his explosiveness off the line, his hand technique, and then get into the backfield. But when you're having to kind of limit yourself in terms of your explosiveness and penetrating those gaps and just hold up guys, obviously you're going to produce much less. So what he's doing right now is not necessarily, you know, fitted to his biggest skill set, which is his explosiveness and his hand technique off the line of scrimmage. So if he was asked to do that more, he would definitely be producing more. That's undoubtedly true. We've seen the power. We've seen him holding up against two guys. We've seen him get really close on a few sacks. He'll get there. Like I said, I wouldn't be concerned. He's a rookie. I don't know, the Jets are 11 games into the season, but he missed a few games. And he's, like I said, he's being asked to do something that's not going to show up on the stat sheet and to the stat humpers, I like to call them, of Twitter. So don't be too worried.
I also think that there's something to the fact that he came back so early from high ankle sprain. We've seen what's gone on with Saquon Barkley and the Giants. When he came back early from that high ankle sprain, he just wasn't as explosive. So I think there's probably something to that as well. This leads us into the next question from Danny Wilson. He says, I know it's too early to know for sure, but now that we have some data on all the rookies, if you could go back and do the third pick over again, who would you pick if you were the Jets? My personal answer to this is I'd still take Quinton Williams number 3. Again, Joe, like you said, it comes down to way more than stats. A lot of people are going to be impressed by Josh Allen's sack numbers. And listen, Josh Allen's had a nice rookie year, but let's remember, he's got Calais Campbell up there eating guys up. He's also got Yannick Ngakoue across the way. And a lot of it has to do with the quality of that defense and the fact that Allen is getting a lot of the vulture sacks. What you heard going into the draft is that some of the skepticism around Josh Allen is that some teams, including the Jets, were worried about how much of the sacks that he had at Kentucky were sacks that he created himself. Now, there were quite a few, but there were also quite a few that he did not create himself in Kentucky. And when you went back and watched the tape, you saw that. Joe, you and I agreed that Allen had incredible potential, and he had a higher ceiling than Nick Bosa, but there was a much lower floor. So you had a situation with him where he could be an elite pass rusher, or he could end up being Vic Beasley. And to be fair, he could still end up being Vic Beasley, because let's remember, Vic Beasley's second year in the league, he had 15.5 sacks. But when you went back and watched the tape, like I said, a lot of those were vulture sacks. And what I mean by that is coverage sacks or cleanup sacks, and then he dipped back to the norm. So we don't know exactly what we're going to get from Josh Allen going forward. I can say that if you watch that Jets game, while he had a couple of sacks, a lot of that was because, like I said, he was a vulture in that situation. And it's good because he was able to get the job done as it was right there in front of him. But as those opportunities come less and less and less, how much is he going to be able to create for himself? That's the question. So to me, Quinton Williams, for what he's been asked to do, has done very well. He hasn't made those splash plays yet because most of the time he's not being asked to do that. And Greg Williams, as you said, Joe, and as we've talked about before, does not care about guys' stats. He doesn't care about any of that. He cares about getting to the next week and putting the defense in the best position to win and to make plays. And if he feels that, for now at least, that Quinton Williams' best usage is to two-gap and to stunt and to take on multiple blockers and open things up for other guys to cover for the deficiencies in other areas, then that's what he's going to do. And he doesn't care if people are disappointed that the number 3 overall pick is used that way. Because like you said, Joe, I'm disappointed too. I would love to see him making big plays, but that's just not the way that Greg Williams is using him right now. So you talked about Ed Oliver before. Now I'm talking about Josh Allen. I think those are the guys that most people would compare him to. Let's be honest about this. Nobody was suggesting that the Jets would pick Brian Burns at number 3, and he's had a really good rookie season. The only way he would have been in play is if the Jets would have traded probably to right around the end of the top 10 or even just outside of the top 10. So I think that the two guys that you could realistically talk about here are Oliver and Josh Allen. And if I could go back, I would still take Quinton Williams, because I'm still convinced that he's going to be the stud that we saw on that tape at Alabama. And I think that when he gets unleashed, we're going to see more of that. But like you said, Joe, so far he's been used in a way that's not really going to show up in the stat sheet. And I would also add, since Leonard Williams was thrown in here, I know that there's a lot of talk about all the double teams that Leonard Williams got, but the difference between Quinnen Williams and Leonard Williams so far, and obviously it's very early for Quinnen Williams, is that Leonard Williams did attack the quarterback plenty too, and he got a lot of pressures, and he got a lot of QB hits. It's just he wasn't a finisher, and it was a weird, ahistoric trend with him. I'd never seen anybody get that many pressures and that many hits and so few sacks. So he was getting to the quarterback. He just wasn't finishing. With Quinnen Williams, he's just being asked to do things where he's not going to be in a position to be in the quarterback's face that much. So that's how I see it, Joe. Do you agree?
Honestly, so this would be like something if I was just like one of those stats guys, then yeah, okay, maybe I would want Josh Allen because he has, what, 7.5, eight and a half sacks, whatever it is. But also look in the position that he's playing in. When you're playing on a defensive line with guys like Ngakoue and guys like Calais Campbell, one, you're going to get sacks because the quarterback is going to run directly into you, running away from that pressure from the Ngakoue, whether it would be from the left or from the right, or Calais Campbell up the middle. So he's probably running into a lot of sacks, I'm assuming. I haven't watched Josh Allen that closely. And two, he's asked to do a different thing. He's asked to rush the quarterback in almost every single snap, where Quinnen Williams is not being asked to do that. So if I was just looking at the stats, would that be my consensus? Oh, yeah, get Josh Allen? Yes, but I trust my eyes enough. I trust what I see that I saw in Alabama, knowing how young of a player he is and being asked to do what he is doing with the Jets. I'm not going to back down on my opinion where I thought he's the best player in the draft. I still think that he is and he was. Nick Bosa is obviously producing a ton with the 49ers as well, but he obviously wasn't in a position for the Jets to draft. He was drafted first overall, so the Jets couldn't have drafted him, or second overall, whatever the 49ers mm-hmm. were. I forget if they're number one or number two, but it doesn't matter. And he's also on the defensive line that is like that team right now, their defense is absolutely ridiculous. So if he was asked to do that on a team that doesn't have as much edge talent, as much interior talent as, the 49ers do with Armstead and all those guys, maybe he wouldn't produce as much either, because he's not able to draw, or he's not drawing that extra tight end, that running back chipping on him, because he's not the number one threat to get to the quarterback on that team. So it's just different. So I trust my eyes enough to say that Quinnen Williams is, it would still be my number three pick if we had to redo it today, because like we said, he's young, he's being asked to do something different than necessarily what suits his strength and what what's going to produce on the stat sheet. If you put him in the same position as Ed Oliver, you traded spots, I'm sure that you'd see Quinnen Williams with another couple sacks this year and producing more highlight hits and things like that. So I definitely trust my eyes much more than to just go back on what I thought, a few months ago after watching hours and hours of tape of all these guys. And Josh Allen is a guy who, I was very high on, Scott, and I told you that when we started doing those things that I was considering putting him above Nick Bosa for me, because I thought he had a higher ceiling than Nick Bosa. He's producing a lot, so I'm glad that he's working out. But I'm still not going to go back on what I thought of just a few months ago. It's still very, very early into all of those guys' careers. So
what you mentioned about quarterbacks running into sacks, we actually saw that when the Jets played the Jaguars, when Darnold was running away from Calais Campbell and Josh Allen got him. So that does happen quite a bit with Josh Allen. It happened in Kentucky a little bit too, like I said, where you could classify it as a vulture sack. He's done well. He's had a really nice rookie year. But again, let's remember the cautionary tale of Vic Beasley. And we both said before the draft, Joe, that Allen had a higher ceiling than Bosa, but he also had a much lower floor than Bosa, and so there was the possibility that he could be just an ordinary player. And it's very early. It's very early, just as it was for Vic Beasley. We'll see which way this goes, if he ends up being an elite edge rusher, which we both agreed he could become, or if he ends up being a very ordinary player, which we also agreed he could become. Next question comes in from Andrew Fitzgerald. He says, besides playing lower-level competition, what aspect of the team do you think has contributed the most to the Jets' current success? I believe he means the 3-game winning streak. Also, who is underrated on this offense? So I think that the biggest thing that's contributed to the Jets having this 3-game winning streak is the fact that Darnold seems to be in complete command of the offense. And I think a lot of this has to do with that meeting that they had, where presumably Darnold sat down with Gase and said, okay, let's go through your playbook. I'll tell you what I like. I'll tell you what I'm comfortable with. And let's get rid of everything else. Ever since then, it seemed like Darnold has been a completely different quarterback, and this offense has been a completely different unit. So that's my answer. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, which I don't, you know, to be, like I said up front, I don't know why that conversation didn't happen, you know, day one of their meeting together, but that definitely should have happened sooner. I don't know why it came to the Jets losing for that to happen. There was conversation early in the offseason where he's saying, oh, well, Darnold's, you know, in control of the playbook and all this stuff. So I really thought that would happen earlier, but it's nicer to hear that, you know, that Darnold came up and said that to Gase, even though, like I said, that's a huge question for me. I don't understand that necessarily. They're getting Darnold on the move more. He's more comfortable on the move. His sloppy mechanics don't happen as much when he's on the move. And he just like a natural like backyard type baller. So when he's on the move, he just feels more comfortable than having to stand in the pocket. That's where you see a little bit more of his bad mechanics come in with the step in the bucket. You see a little bit more of that windmill release, which, like I said, you know, pre-draft or even maybe after the draft, that his release is still great. It just takes it from being elite to great because of that windmill release. It adds an extra, you know, quarter of a second onto his, you know, not necessarily a quarter of a second, but a slight, you know, extra time onto that release. So they've been doing more of that, obviously playing lesser competition, not playing teams like the Patriots and even the Jaguars, who have a good pass rush, and now playing teams like the Redskins, the Giants, and the Raiders definitely helps. But he's getting on the move more for sure. In terms of the overall success, Darnold's obviously a big piece that he looks much more comfortable, really struggled versus the Patriots, but minus the Patriots game and a couple of interceptions versus the Jaguars game, he's been very, very good this year. And I you know, in terms of numbers against him and him having the least time in the NFL to throw and the Jets ground game being really, really bad again, I think when you're starting to see him more comfortable in the pocket, have more time, you're starting to see him make some incredible plays, and that's why I'm sure Joe Douglas is going to throw a ton of capital, whether that be draft picks or free agency money, into the offensive line, because you put a running game and an offensive line to protect Darnold, you know, around him, watch out, because I still have a ton of faith in Darnold. He's been showing these last couple of weeks in terms of the defense. Honestly, not having one of the highest paid cornerbacks on the team helps or play. Definitely helps with the secondary. Having guys like Bless Austin step up is definitely helping them, even though he's been asked to do some simple things, which I think we've got a question about him, so I won't touch too much on it. But having the corners play better is definitely a big piece. Having guys like Fadakasi play more, having guys like Nathan Shepard come back and produce more, having some more guys healthy. You know, the Jets were missing Copeland for a couple of games because of suspension. They missed Jenkins for a couple of games. They're still missing Mosley. They're still missing, you know, Avery Williamson. They're literally down to what? Their sixth string inside linebacker right now. People don't really talk about injuries a ton with the Jets, like who aren't Jets fans, but you're missing Mosley, Avery Williamson, you're missing Blake Cash, you're missing Hewitt for a lot of the games, and you're missing, what's his name, McClellan, and you're playing with Burgess for a couple of games as your starter, who's like the sixth string inside linebacker. So the Jets are starting to get a little bit more healthy on defense, which does help as well, but I'm definitely looking forward to them adding, you know, potentially another corner or two, an edge rusher, getting healthy. I don't know if they're going to keep Avery Williamson. I want him back. I want him back on this team because I really do like Avery Williamson in his game. I think him and CJ Mosley could be an elite, you know, inside linebacker duo. And in terms of the offense, I think there was a question in there about who's underrated. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say two guys who I stand for when they were signed. And a lot of people, after one or two bad games or them not producing, people were saying the Jets had no tight end. Oh, he's terrible. Ryan Griffin, get him out of here. Why is he even playing for the Jets? And Demaryius Thomas, he dropped one pass against the Cleveland Browns and people were telling me to cut him. Or they should have cut him. Why is he here? Blah, 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 blah. And now look at it. You know, Demaryius Thomas is consistently producing. For the most part, you know, he has like a stat line every game of like four catches, 50 yards, and he's getting first downs. Now, does he drop a pass or two? Yes, that's been a problem throughout his career. That's something that's not really, you know, new information. But I think as a third receiver, he was going to be a guy who's a good contributing veteran, and that's exactly what he's been. So I think he's been a little bit underrated. And then Ryan Griffin, like I said, he's been getting touchdowns. He's been a touchdown machine. The Jets just signed him to a 3-year extension, I believe, like $9 million, somewhere right around there, for a reason. I watched the tape. You know, with him, with the Texans now. And I said, he's not a good blocker. He's a willing blocker. We saw the willingness of the blocks on that, you know, read option play with the lead blocker. If Darnold did decide to keep the ball on that first touchdown run where he actually trucked over, I think it's Swearinger. He's actually a hard hitting safety, which is kind of nice and not nice to see at the same time. So in that aspect, he's been okay. And then in the passing game, he's a decent route runner. He has solid hands. He catches balls that come to him, and he has decent speed to stretch the seams up the field. So those two guys have been producing for the Jets. Obviously, You know, we could talk about Crowder and Anderson, but I don't really think those guys are necessarily underrated because they've been talked about that a lot. But I think those two signings, which were both made by Joe Douglas, were solid signings, and they've been producing for the Jets. So kudos to Joe Douglas for them. And I think that's I don't know if I missed anything there, but I might be.
I agree with you on Demaryius Thomas. That was a move that I was fine with, but I had no expectations for it, and he's done pretty well. He's produced on a week-in, week-out basis for the most part, like you said. I can't really give you Ryan Griffin because at this point I don't think anybody's underrating him anymore, especially now that he's got 5 touchdowns and just signed the contract extension. But I do think that going into the season, certainly he was underrated, and even in the early part of the season. Next question comes in from Daniel Lafferty. He says, how does a level-headed Jets fan navigate his, her, their internet fandom with a vocal minority of clowns and jerks who call for a new coach to be fired halfway through an injury-plagued season with what was widely considered a thin roster to begin with? Joe, I think you actually wrote this and called yourself Daniel Lafferty, because this sounds like something you would say. I'll answer this quickly, and then I'll give it to you, Joe. My whole thing with Adam Gase was, and I would have been totally fine with him getting fired, even though I knew there was no way it was going to happen.
Can I say it for you, Scott? Because I think you say the same. I think you said the same thing 1,000 times. My problem with him coming from Miami wasn't necessarily his play calling. He's always been touted as a good player caller. It was more about the back office stuff. go ahead.
That more or less sums it up, the managerial aspect of it. And when the team is winning, usually that stuff falls into the background. But when the team's losing, you see a lot of issues. You saw some problems with players. Obviously, Jamal Adams is one that jumps out. Some of the things where he wasn't taking accountability, you were hearing different reports going on. And so that's going to be something that everybody should continue to monitor. He lost the locker room in Miami. He completely lost control of what was going on there, and he was a bad manager. And that was the biggest problem. But now here with the Jets, he's got a second chance. He's got an opportunity to make the most of it, because we know that even before this 3-game winning streak, he was going to be back next year, which anybody who was paying attention knew was going to be the case anyway, mostly because Christopher Johnson had staked his reputation to the hiring of Gase, not only when he hired him in the first place, but then when he allowed Gase to push Maccagnan out. So there was no way that Christopher Johnson was going to swallow his pride away that would make him look like such a fool that quickly. So he was never going anywhere, at least not till the end of the year. And most likely he was never going anywhere next year either. Now we know for a fact he's not going anywhere next year. So he's got an opportunity to show that he's learned some things and grown from what happened in Miami. And Joe, just to backtrack to what you were saying before, the fact that this meeting of the minds with Donald and Gase didn't happen so much earlier is very troublesome. And that kind of tells you why a lot of people were worried about Gase in the first place, because I don't care if his excuse is legit, that if he'd have gone to Darnold, Darnold would have said, what do you mean, coach? Everything's fine. If you're the coach, you have to recognize things are not going well, and you have to go to the quarterback and you say, listen, I've been watching the film. This isn't working. Let's sit down, the two of us, and figure this out. The analogy I made is, it's kind of like if you're a parent and you see one of your kids struggling in a subject at school and you ask him, do you need help? Is everything okay? And he says, yeah, it's fine. But you look and he's failing every test. At that point, you just got to jump in and take the reins and say, listen, I know that you're saying you don't need help, but you're getting help anyway, because clearly what's going on right now isn't working. So that's something that Gase absolutely should have taken care of. And he's not out of the woods with me yet. Right now, I'm still highly skeptical of him. Obviously, I'm happy with the way that Sam Darnold is playing, and that is fantastic. So let's hope that that continues. And hopefully, those of us, myself included, that were highly skeptical about Gase end up being proven wrong over the long haul. We're going to find out over the next year or two. But as far as keeping a level head, it's tough, man, especially on social media. We know this. People tend to overreact and get very emotional over things. People were ready to throw a ton of guys out the window. You've seen it many times. One guy has a bad game, get him out of here. One guy has a great game, sign him to a 20-year extension. That's just the nature of the way people are sometimes. And I think a lot of times, too, people are watching in the moment and they get carried away. They don't pay super close attention to the little things the way somebody like Joe does when he breaks down the film. So the best thing I could tell you is do your best to rationally observe what's going on around the team. Do your best to rationally watch the games and see what's happening. Do your best to go back and watch little bits and pieces of the film and try and figure out what's really going on. And then obviously do your best to listen to people who you deem trustworthy to see if your opinions match theirs. And then maybe they make a point that you hadn't considered and it changes your mind. Maybe they make a point that you completely disagree with. And so you disagree with them and that's fine. But it's that combination, I think, is trying to rationally approach everything from a viewing standpoint and then listening to other people who have interesting opinions. And even if you disagree, you can at least consider their opinion. And so you can move forward and say, here's where I agree, here's where I disagree. And you can kind of meld that into everything and form your own opinion. But I think that's the best way to keep a level head. It's not easy, especially with social media.
So I found the question while you were speaking from Jim Six Bunch of Numbers. How does a level-headed Jets fan navigate his, her, their internet fandom with a vocal minority of clowns, and mother word, who call for their new coach to be fired halfway through the injury plague season? Yeah, I just had to read it again because it might have been me asking my own question. It's just don't go on the internet. Seriously, that's what I've been doing. I've been so much happier. The problem with me and something I got caught up in is trying to convince everybody my opinion when 99% of the people you're speaking to have no idea what they're talking about. They don't know. Football is such a complex game that even if you think you do know, you probably don't know. So taking anyone's opinion and really getting angry about it, I think it's just dumb. And I think I learned from my mistake of trying to do that. I think when I do come back, I'm going to put stuff out there. If you respond to it, it's a dumb take that I don't want to argue, I'm just not going to answer people. When I have a few Miller Lights in me, I'm just going to turn off my freaking phone. just don't go on the internet, because how many people could tell you about a hawk concept, a cab concept, what a mesh concept attacks, or what a sail concept, what a flood concept is? This is stuff that's happening every single play, or offensive line technique. You know how hard it is to learn about the offensive line? People are watching something. They could see the results, but they have no idea why it's happening. They don't know different offenses. They don't know different concepts. They don't know techniques or proper techniques or combo blocks or what combo blocks are supposed to go where. They don't know anything. So don't listen to people. Like Scott said, find people you trust. I don't know if I've earned people's trust, but when I speak, like, listen to guys like me or Scott, or when he has Jamal Westerman on, guys who have played the game or know the game, listen to those people. Just avoid the internet. That's the best thing. Now with Gase, I watched the offense. I watched the offense with an ex-NFL defensive back, and we talked about a lot of film. That's why I have confidence in myself. His offense is good. He has really good ideas. He runs some really good concepts. And there was plays we watched in Miami where Marcus said even if he knew the play before it happened, he doesn't know how people would necessarily defend it. So he has some good ideas. And like you said, with the thin roster to begin with, the thing before going into the season was, okay, the Jets have a lot of top-tier talent at starters. The depth is a massive concern. When you go into the season, you see that the Jets are missing five starting inside linebackers for a lot of the season. They missed Jordan Jenkins for a good chunk of the beginning of the season. They missed Copeland. They have Herndon, their star rookie tight end of last year, play what one quarter of this of the season. And Nunez out for the season. Cornerbacks are out. Outside, they're the most injured team in the NFL on a thin team, and you're playing the first couple weeks of the season where people said, oh, well, if the Jets can make it through these first six games, 2-4, 1-5, I think that's what's realistically going to happen. The Jets had all those injuries. And guess what? They went through those first six, seven games at 1-5. Like that's what we expected to happen with a healthy roster. So they have a bad roster and you have Luke Falk playing and Trevor Siemian for a quarter or two. And people are getting on Gase like, oh my God, he doesn't know how to run an offense. I want to see any offensive coordinator, I don't care if it's Bill Belichick, and I'm really legitimately saying Bill Belichick wins some of those games with Luke Falk, the worst running game in the NFL per yards per carry, per contact before he gets to the line of scrimmage, wherever all the numbers are, and the worst pass blocking unit in the NFL. Have fun. It's just not going to happen against teams like, even the Eagles, who have a bad secondary, they have a good pass rush. The Jaguars, who have a good pass rush. The Browns, who are talented, who are not well coached. The New England Patriots, even when Darnold was back. So they were put in a really, really shitty position with a bad roster and playing tough teams. Now that they're playing, they're getting a tiny bit healthier. They're playing teams like the Dolphins, hopefully in a couple of weeks. They should have beat them the first time. They just didn't play a good game. Everybody was off that game. But the Redskins, the Giants, now they're starting to blow these teams out and put up points, which is what you want to see. I would be more concerned about this team if they were beating the Redskins, 21-17 or even the Raiders last week, which a lot of people just expected them or hope they could win because it's a real test, to see if they could beat, an average team, which I think the Raiders are a little bit overhyped. If they're an average team, they blew them the hell out. The Bengals are going to be a huge test. They feel themselves too much. The Dolphins the next week after, that's going to be a huge test. So they're put in a terrible position with a really thin roster that's been the most injured team in the NFL, with a new coach teaching new players a new system with a new quarterback who got mono, who then had to play with Luke Falk. So the season has kind of played out like we've expected with their record right now, just in a different way because they've been one of the most injured team in the NFL. So that's what's frustrated me so much, trying to prove people wrong on Twitter and then hearing people, I put out hours and hours and hours of film work and then hear them say, oh, Quinnen Williams, he hasn't got a sack yet, he's a buster. Oh, Adam Gase, he's terrible. Look at his play calling. I could do better. You're wrong. Just people, 99% of people are wrong. Don't listen to them. That's probably the most reason that I'm off Twitter right now and I haven't been doing stuff, is because people drive me absolute crazy. But I can confirm I did not ask myself this question, but this is a good question. So
a lot of people have been asking about Greg Williams, Joe, and I talked about this with Chris Nimbley. Chris Nimbley went into the season not loving Greg Williams, and Joe Caparoso, same thing. But they've come around. Everybody has to admit that Greg Williams has done a really good job this season, especially when you consider all the pieces that he's missing. He's found ways to make this defense very productive on a week-in, week-out basis. They have the number one rushing defense in the league. That is not as important as having the number one passing defense in the league, but the passing defense has even improved as he's given Blessing Austin and Arthur Millett a chance. And I want you to talk about that, Joe, because we also had some questions about Blessing Austin and Arthur Millett and what you think about what you've seen from them so far and whether or not they're the real deal or if it's just a quick couple of games and it's too early to judge. But I think as far as Greg Williams goes, he's not going to get poached because no one's going to hire him as a head coach after the Bounty Gate thing. He's just never going to get another head coaching job again other than an interim tag like he did in Cleveland. Everyone knew that he was never going to be the permanent head coach there. The only way that I think Greg Williams ends up not as the defensive coordinator next year is if there's some behind-the-scenes strife between him and Gase that we don't know about. Other than that, I think that he'll be back. He's done a really good job, and you would think Gase would be happy with him because with Greg Williams there, he hasn't had to worry about the defense, which is exactly what somebody like Gase wants, because Gase just wants to be the head coach of the offense. So that's my take on Williams and whether or not he's going anywhere. As far as Austin Millett, I've talked about this before. They've both played very well, but it's been a short sample size. What you've seen from Bless Austin, though, is the player that a lot of people talked about when he was at Rutgers before he got injured, which of course is somebody who has the ranginess, the size, the length, the speed, the instincts, all of that to be a good player in the NFL. It was just a matter of the injuries. I will say that Dr. Stoller has talked a couple of times about the fact that you can have a productive career in the NFL now with two blown ACLs that have been repaired. It didn't used to be the case, but with modern technology, they've had so much advancement in medicine that now you could have a productive long career. And he's also talked about the fact that Blessing Austin doesn't seem to be favoring either one of his knees, which is also a good sign. So I think Millett is somebody who's traveled around a little bit, but he's looked very good the last couple of weeks. So fingers crossed, a little early to determine whether those two guys are definitely long-term starters, but promising beginnings for both. So what do you think, Joe? Greg Williams, do you think there's a chance he goes? What do you think of the job he's done? And talk a little bit about Bless Austin and Arthur Millett.
Yeah, and just to touch my basis on the last question too, because I like to cover my ground with Gase, and you're talking about the locker room stuff, and it does worry me a little bit. Posting Quincy Nunez, fine. The thing which one, Quincy Newman was wrong for not showing up, regardless of if it was for Veterans Day dinner or whatever. So that stuff's concerning. So I do agree with that. But on the field stuff, I'm not too concerned. And even the KO situation, I didn't really comment on it. That's kind of sketchy. I'm not going to get into that, but that's sketchy from both sides, from KO trying to maybe get some money. I don't know. And then another thing with like the Twitter guys is Robbie Anderson, another thing I heard, oh, he's terrible, get rid of him. Guess what, idiots? To throw the ball deep, you have to have time to throw the ball deep and step up into the pocket. Guess what you can't do with a really bad offensive line? That's like the things you hear that are crazy. In terms of Greg Williams, he's doing fantastic right now. I don't know what the numbers are. I know they're number one in defense. I think I heard you say, I just started listening to the Jets podcast again after like 3 weeks and not listening to anything other than like Joe Rogan. Is that I think they're like top 10 or close to top 10 right now in overall defense. Mm-hmm. With what they are provided, that is like defensive coordinator of the year stuff. It really is. With the cornerbacks they have, Bless Austin's a guy who wasn't even supposed to really make the roster. Arthur Millett's like an undrafted free agent from whatever. I think he's like 3 years into his NFL career. There's a guy playing some snaps last week. I literally didn't even know who he was. So what he's doing with those guys, which he's putting them in a lot of simple zones, a lot of cover two, cloud corner, asking them to jam guys, stay aggressive in the run game, which is why you're seeing them make some plays, because they have their eyes on the quarterback and they're not really, you know, dropping deep into zones or playing a lot of man down the field, which they have obviously on some occasions, but they're more frequently deployed in some shallow zones, which is why you're seeing them more in the run game. In terms of like their long-term stuff, I think Mallette is a little bit more sporadic of a guy. I think he's making impact because you see him more in the box where making tackles, but in terms of coverage, he's up and down. Bless Austin, I think, is a guy who has more potential for the long term. When I watch him, I see him, you know, keeping his hips square, getting his hands on, matching guys. He has a size, he has the athleticism, like you said, with his measurables, he has his speed. So I think he's a guy, a long term type guy. Now going into the season, if either one of these guys are 1 and 2 or the number one and the number two, the Jets have failed. You know, Austin is a guy who I don't think you can ever depend on to be your number one or number two because of his injury problems. You have to take that into consideration. Now, if he can develop into a long-term four, you know, a spot starter guy who comes in on, you know, on dime looks, that's completely fine. Or even a guy who has to, you know, come in maybe if, let's say, a guy like whoever it may be is struggling versus a bigger matchup, a guy in Austin who's more physical can come up and play that guy. Yeah, sure, but if either one of these guys are the starters next year, I think it's a failed offseason for Joe Douglas. I would more be comfortable with these guys, you know, next season as number four and number five, and probably like Roberts as the sixth, with number one and number two being completely different with Poole in the slot. So I think they have capability to be, you know, long-term producers, role players. I don't think that either one of them should be starters. I definitely have more faith in Austin to stick around than Mallette, who, like I said, could be a number five or number six, but let's not go crazy, like I said. And like people have pointed out, they're playing less talented teams and they're asked to do pretty simple things, so let's not get crazy. But the sign is pointing up definitely more for Austin than Mallette. And I guess more to touch on Greg Williams, the run defense has been absolutely fantastic. They have a bunch of monsters up there. McClendon has been probably the most underrated Jet of the last, you know, 10 years. He's a beast in the run game. Shepard's producing a lot. He's a bat out of hell. He doesn't have the cleanest technique, but he just blows guys up. Fado Kassi is looking like a new snacks. He is ridiculously powerful, really good anchor, gets super, super low, gets his hands inside. So Fado Kassi is one of the biggest surprises of the year. Even Basham, guys like that, Jordan Jenkins are playing well. So kudos to those guys for that. That's more the talent taking over, which is great for the long term. And then Quinn Williams eventually, you know, stepping up and developing even more. That's really exciting for the future. I think if you were to add, you know, let's say a Ngakoue or whoever it may be this off season, you get a corner or two, and they're healthy. You have Mosley back. You have, you know, people are now saying, oh, we'll get rid of Williamson. Hubert's just as good. That's another thing that's ridiculous. But if they have all their guys healthy and they add another two guys to this defense, or three guys, you know, outside linebacker, two corners, watch the hell out, because this defense can be top tier. I think before the season, Scott, we said that this could be a top 10 defense. We didn't expect a top 10 defense with all the injuries that had C.J. Mosley out, Williamson out, Jenkins missing games, Copeland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So really hell of a job to Greg Williams. And, you know, honestly, if there was one guy I was hoping to get extended right now to hear it would be Greg Williams. I don't think he's going to be a head coach anywhere because, like you said, with Bountygate, but if he was signed to a 2-3 year extension now, I'd be extremely happy because he has coached his balls off.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Before we get to our next question, I want to bring in Dr. Stoller, our expert on all things medical, 35-year orthopedic surgeon, to talk about the injuries this week. Dr. Stoller, how was your Thanksgiving, sir?
It was very good, Scott. It was very good.
Glad that we have some things to be thankful for here, Doc. The Jets go into this game with a 3-game winning streak, And compared to what we've seen most weeks with this injury report, it doesn't look too bad. So let's start with the guys that are out. Talk me through this. CJ Mosley, Chuma Edoga, and Paul Warlow, who until last week I wasn't sure was an actual person or just the name they were putting on the report to throw people off. So tell me a little bit about their three injuries. You shared with me a couple of interesting observations about all three of them.
Sure. As far as Edoga goes, he injured his knee, and the MRI revealed a grade 2 sprain of the MCL, which is the medial collateral ligament. And that ligament connects the thigh bone to the shin bone on the inside of the knee and prevents the knee joint from moving sideways. There are two components of it. There's a superficial and a deep layer to the ligament. And with a grade 2 injury, both layers are partially torn. So he's going to be kept out for at least 4 weeks in a knee brace in order to allow the ligament to heal in its proper position. And if they rush back the knee before it's fully healed, you'll end up with a loose ligament and chronic instability. So that's why they'll take time in rehabbing him and keeping him in a protective knee brace. CJ Mosley, you know, continues to have, you know, problems with groin pain, which I believe is secondary to a sports hernia. And pain is the only really limited factor for his return. So I would think that if he continues to struggle with pain management at this point in the season, that maybe it'd be wise for him just to undergo surgery if he indeed has a sports hernia and requires that to be repaired. Paul Warlow has a quadriceps injury, which usually means that the muscle in the front of the thigh bone is partially torn due to a contusion or a bruise. And the muscle fibers require time and protection in order for it to heal properly. Because on rare occasion, the cells in repairing its tissue become confused and can actually form bone within the muscle. So if it's a significant tear and or painful, they want to limit his motion until the inflammation is decreased.
Let's talk about the players that are listed as questionable. To the best of my knowledge, they all look like they're going to play. Henry Anderson, Kelvin Beachum, Matthias Fairley, Alex Lewis, Steve McClendon, Daryl Roberts, and Demaryius Thomas, who seems to be on the injury report literally every single week. Talk to me about these guys, Doc.
Well, Henry Anderson, you know, has played, and he has an AC separation or sprain. And he's been in limited practice, but I believe he's going to play. I think the question is, if he does indeed have pain for this period of time, then it's probably more significant than a first-degree AC separation. And as I think I mentioned before, that he may require some form of surgical intervention after the season. Kevin Beachum, my understanding is that he didn't re-injure his high ankle sprain, but actually sustained a sprain to his opposite ankle, but was taped during the game and returned during the game. So being as a limited practice, he did return last week. I think he will be able to play this week. As far as Farley's concerned with his quadriceps, you know, the same thing applies to a quadricep injury. Being that he was in limited practice, I don't think we have to worry about the healing with any formation of bone, and he will probably be qualified to return. Alex Lewis has been listed for shoulder and elbow, but he continues to wear a shoulder harness as Winters and Cashman have worn during the season. So he has some instability in his shoulder. But I noticed last week for his elbow that he was wearing an elbow brace, which would protect the ligaments, in addition to kinesio taping, which is a form of taping to reduce pain and inflammation in the elbow. But again, since he played with it last week, I imagine I should be able to play again this week. Steve McClendon is dealing with, you know, a sprain to his neck, which is, you know, being treated symptomatically, and he was able to play last week, so I think he will again. Darryl Roberts is recovering from a calf strain, and he's been in limited practice, but my understanding is that he probably will play tomorrow. And as for the others, they're pretty much listed every week, and they've been in limited or full participation, so I think that they will all be available tomorrow.
They can use all the help they can get, because even though Cincinnati is the worst team in the league, we all know that this is the type of game that has typically been a trap for the New York Jets. It's weird to say that anything could be a trap for a 4-7 team, but that is the way that this feels right now. So having as many healthy players as possible is always a good thing. Doc, thanks so much for coming on. As always, really appreciate it. Why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of you if they want to ask you about this stuff directly, talk Jets, or talk about just about anything else?
Well, thanks, Scott, for having me. And you can find me on Twitter for on Dr. Stephen Stoller, MD, and The Aging Athlete.
Thanks, Doc. Talk to you next week. Now let's bring in my brother, Craig, to give his gambling picks for the week, courtesy of the Vivid Seats mobile app. If you download the Vivid Seats mobile app right now and use the promo code OVERTIME, you get up to $100 off on your very first purchase. You could use it for tickets to go see the Jets and Bengals later today if you're in Cincinnati but haven't gotten your tickets yet. $100 off on some pretty good seats could come in very handy right now, but it would also come in handy for a lot of other events. You could go to a wrestling match. You could go to a boxing match. You could go to a concert, another sporting event, perhaps a basketball game, a hockey game, and so much more. Anything you want to do, it's available for you on the Vivid Seats mobile app. Just download it right now. Use the promo code OVERTIME, and you'll get yourself up to $100 off on your very first purchase. Craig, who do you like this week?
Hey, what's up, Scott and everybody? It's a rough week here with Thanksgiving, and, you know, my wife's any day now this baby's coming, so hard to make it onto the podcast, but still want to make my picks here. It's been a rough 2 weeks for me, but hoping to bounce back this week. So going to go here with the first pick, Chiefs at home minus 10 against Oakland. Yeah, division rivalry, but I kind of think things are going to unravel here for Oakland. Rough game against the Jets last week, and I think Kansas City is going to start to finish it off strong for the playoffs. And so I like Kansas City in this one, minus the 10 versus Oakland. I think it's going to be an absolute blowout. Second pick, another division game. This is huge game for playoff possible wild card implications. My second pick here is going to be Cleveland minus 2 at Pittsburgh. I just think Cleveland's a better team. I know they've gone through a lot this season, a lot of struggles, but I don't know. Someone's just telling me Cleveland minus 2 on the road at Pittsburgh. Cleveland's pretty hot team right now, so that's going to be pick number 2. Pick number 3, probably the best game of the week, or one of the best games of the week, but I'm going to pick the Monday Night Football game, Vikings plus 3 on the road at Seattle. Tough pick. Seattle's been great. Russell Wilson, MVP candidate. All that being said, I still like Minnesota here, plus the 3 on the road Monday night. Tough game, but I think Cousins shows everybody he's for real. Big game, has a big game, and this will be a huge win for Minnesota, take this one down. So I like Minnesota here, plus the 3 at Seattle. So recap, Chiefs minus 10 versus Oakland, Cleveland minus 2 versus Pittsburgh, and Vikings plus 3 versus Seattle. My teaser, I'm going to do the Chiefs minus 3 against Oakland, and I'm going to do Texans plus 10.5 Sunday Night Football against the Patriots. That's another, you know, I'm going to add a fourth pick here also. I do like the Texans plus the 3.5 against New England. Tough game. Sunday night, crowd's going to be pumped. I like Texans to win this one outright. So fourth pick, Texans plus the 3.5, and then I'm going to do Texans and Chiefs in my teaser. And yeah, that's it. So speak to you next week. Hopefully I'm a dad by then. So talk soon.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Byron wrote in to ask about whether or not we think Henry Anderson is a dirty player. I'll answer that real quickly. Yes, because Henry Anderson has been caught on tape many times. In fact, if you go back and look at the opener against the Bills, he was caught numerous times. He dove at Josh Allen's legs long after the play. He hit him after the play. But I'll let you talk about that if you want, Joe. But the quick answer to that is yes, he is a dirty player. Also, he asked about a weird shift he saw on the offensive line. I know that you saw that question, so I'll let you handle that one. And then Jets Joe 73 wants to know if you've gotten the opportunity to watch any college film yet, and if so, if there are any players that you like so far.
Okay, so there was a question about the O-line, college, and Anderson. Anderson, yeah, he's dirty. He was a part of the reason that we lost that game. He had to take an extra – I think he took three or four steps and hit Josh Allen that one play that got the roughing the passer, got them the first down, third down, which was a big part of losing that game, you know, among other things, the missed field goals, et cetera. But, yeah, he's a dirty player. It is what it is. There's been multiple examples of him doing that stuff, diving at guys' knees after the play, et cetera. So don't like to see that. In terms of the offensive line, from what that play looked like, there's obviously many different blocking schemes that we've talked about. There's zone blocking schemes. There's man blocking schemes where man is just, okay, you take this guy, you take this guy. It's just like man in defense. And just like zone defense, there's zones. Okay, if this guy goes into your zone, he penetrates this gap, you take him. There's zone tied in with man where, let's say, left tackle's on, they call him Gilligan or Island, where everybody else blocks zone. But then if there's a guy that's the left tackle's left that is a nine tech, he takes him in man no matter where he goes. So, like, there's a bunch of different blocking schemes from what that one seemed like to me. It seemed like the defense was all crashing to the left side. The Jets were matched up in man. And each guy took their guy. Even if they were in zone, they were just following their guys where, you know, let's say if the five tech was crashing into the B gap, but the left tackle noticed that the left guard was taking a guy who was in, you know, as a three tech and crashed into the A gap, that he was taking him, then he had to fill his zone. So what was really happening there, whether it be man or zone, it looked a little bit more like man to me just from that picture, but it's hard to tell from just a picture. They were doing their jobs. They were following their guys. You can't let a bunch of guys crash through gaps and just pass them off, because if too many guys, you know, crash, then you'll be screwed and there's not enough guys to block as many guys are coming. So they did their job on that play. That's basically what happened. Darnold felt it, you know, moved out to the left. And I think that's that big third down throw, I believe that's the play they took a picture of. So they were doing their job, which is kind of odd. And then which they've been better. I'll give them credit over the last couple of weeks, you know, seeing guys like Compton in there, who Winters is probably better than Compton, but Compton being healthy is a positive. Beecham, you know, he's not great, but he's better than Scheller or Doga right now. Clutchy O'Sullivan was terrible to start this season. We're seeing Alex Lewis, who's playing decently, even though every time there's a big play, there's a holding call or something on Alex Lewis. Harrison's playing better than Khalil, so they've been taking a step up. That's definitely a positive. But I'm expecting to see three or four new stars on the offensive line. I think that's going to be the biggest point of emphasis for Joe Douglas this year, which it will be. If you look at the teams that are that he's been a part of building, it's been offensive line centric. And really in the NFL, if you just look at the top teams in the NFL right now, over the last you know, decade, a lot of the best teams are teams with good offensive lines. You know, the Saints, the Eagles of a couple years ago, the Cowboys when they were really hot. The you know, the Patriots, who don't have the best talent, but they have one of the best coaches in Scarnecchia. So offensive line is super important. So they'll address that. And then in terms of college, I've been watching college. You know, there's some guy. I'll dive more deep into that stuff. But obviously, the Chase Young's out there. He's going to be the second pick, if not the first pick. He's absolutely amazing. You have the receivers out there. You have Shenault. You have Lamb. You have Judy, who have been really impressive. You have the tackle, Andrew Thomas, who's been, you know, impressive. So I think with that first round, you really need to tackle position. Obviously, if Chase Young falls, yeah, you're forced into drafting him. But if Andrew Thomas is there, I think he's the pick as of now. Obviously, a lot of things change from now in late November, you know, until April. You know, just like Ja'Kai Polite becoming a top 10 pick to a third round pick who's not on a roster anymore, I don't think. But yeah, some of those guys have impressed me. Now, if one of those offensive tackles is gone, you know, if they can't trade down, they don't want the trade down offer that they're getting. If they want to help Darnold and they drafted Judy or Lamb or Shenault, and you know, one of those guys is now in a group with Crowder, Herndon, Griffin. Hopefully, if Anunua comes back, Demaryius Thomas, if he gets re-signed, you know, that's, I'm fine with giving Sam Darnold more weapons. But those are some guys who have impressed me, even in my general watching of college football, who might be at the top of the draft.
Along those lines, Joe, Gus Toon wanted to know what you think the Jets should do if the two top tackles by consensus, which would be Wirfs and Thomas, are not available when they pick. Should they stay where they are, pick the best available player? Should they trade down? How would you do this? I've talked about this myself before. I think it's an impossible question to answer without knowing where you are in the board, who exactly is available, what the offers are to trade down, so on and so forth. I've always felt that this is not a one-size-fits-all thing. It all depends on what your board looks like. So if you have one player that you've graded well above everybody else and you think he stands out, then I would sit there and take that player unless you get a great offer. If you don't, if you have a bunch of players that you think are right around the same, then trade down, get a bunch of extra picks. It's impossible to know what to do without being in that situation and knowing what's going on at the time, or at least having an idea of where the Jets pick and who is going to be in the discussion. So what do you think, Joe? Do you have any general philosophy when it comes to this?
Yeah, it's impossible. It depends on how the board stacks up. It depends on how Jets rate guys. You know, if they have a guy like, let's say, you know, Lamb there at whatever pick, let's say they pick 12, he's sitting there and they have him as an A-plus player, then yeah, grab him. But if they have, you know, at that same point, if they think that they can trade down to the end of the first round, get another early second or third round pick, and they have a lot of guys in that, you know, in that 30 to 50 range that they really like, and they want to stack some picks up there because the Jets do have a lot of holes in the roster, then yeah, trade down. But it's impossible to tell with what's going to happen in the draft, how the boards are stacked. Would I prefer a trade down because the Jets have so many holes in this roster? Yes, I would. But at the same time, if there's a guy there who's going to be a blue chip elite, you know, level player, then sure, grab him. Obviously, depending on position, I don't think they really need another safety or anything like that. But if, like I said, if Judy or Lamb is there and they really like them, then yeah, sure. But I'd prefer a trade down, get a couple extra picks, you know, get a mid to late first, get a, you know, a tackle, a guard, a center, another guard, another tackle. That's fine with me. Get three corners, I don't care. Get an outside linebacker. They have plenty of holes right now in both their starting lineup and in general. Kind of just with their depth. So it's impossible to tell, though. So that's a hard question to answer, you know, 4 or 5 months out from the draft con. Gustin, you're better than that.
Joe, I'm going to throw a few at you rapid fire to close this out. The first one comes in from Steve Ballou. He says, Darnold's been so impressive outside the pocket recently, and while he might not be Lamar Jackson, he's athletic and can run. Do you think he can become more of a dual threat moving forward? So I'll answer this quickly first. I don't think Sam Darnold's ever going to be a dual threat the way that Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson or players like that are, even Mitchell Trubisky. Although I should say Mitchell Trubisky is not actually a dual threat because he can't throw, but you get the point.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not going to be that type of player in terms of being able to run. Josh Allen, another example. But I do think that Darnold can be that Andrew Luck type guy, that Tony Romo type guy, the guy that can use his mobility and his legs to make a lot of plays and use his legs as a weapon. So I think in a sense he will be a dual threat for years to come. It's just not dual threat in the way that you're talking about, which would be half running back, half quarterback, if that makes sense. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I'm not gonna say he's dual threat like, you know, Lamar Jackson or even like a Russell Wilson, and but you're also seeing some plays where they're designing, you know, quarterback reads or read options on the goal line. He has 2 rushing touchdowns on read options this year. So can he do it? Yes, but you're never gonna see him you know, running the ball a ton, but he's also a threat. That 3rd and 3, he could have got 20 yards. There's plenty of plays where he rolls out and can get yards. He's not a quarterback who runs. He's a quarterback who can run, which is in itself a dual threat because he threatens you in both areas. He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Rivers. He's not Tom Brady. He's not a mobile. So you have to worry about him. I'm sure teams now on the goal line are looking at the Jets film, and, you know, now maybe the Bengals keep that outside linebacker from penetrating hard up the field or crashing down on the running back. Now he might have to stay in to take Darnold if he is to keep the ball, and that opens up the box for Le'Veon Bell. So can he be a dual threat? Yes. I don't think the Jets are going to use him a ton like that because you don't want to get him hurt, and he's not Lamar Jackson. But he is and he isn't, you know.
Let's finish with a couple of questions from John Flesh. He wants to know what the odds are that Jamal Adams breaks the single-season defensive back sack record. Can he get to double-digit sacks if Greg Williams continues to utilize him in blitz packages? What took Williams so long to figure out that Adams is such a force as a blitzer? Also, if C.J. Mosley is able to come back healthy for the stretch run, let's say the Jets are 6-7 heading into that Baltimore game, how much of a lift does he give the defense, and how much of an impact can he make to help the Jets possibly run the table to close out the season? So we'll start with Jamal Adams. I think there's a very good chance that he could break the record. He's got 5 games and he only needs 2 sacks. So I do think it's going to get harder for him because these teams are going to be looking for him and they're going to be trying to find ways to neutralize him. And obviously, when he's shocking them by doing these things, it's different than now that they have the film and they're looking for it and they're going to defend against it specifically. However, 2 sacks in 5 games is certainly doable. And I also think that there's a chance he gets to the double-digit sacks. He only needs 3.5. So it certainly could happen. As far as what took Greg Williams so long to realize that he's such a talented blitzer, I don't know that it's necessarily that. I think it's just a matter of Greg Williams was mixing and matching. I'll let you talk about that, Joe, and what you've seen on film. And then as far as C.J. Mosley, I think it would give them a huge lift. Now, I will say, I don't want C.J. Mosley coming back unless he is 100%, because I do not want to risk anything further happening to him. If it's a choice of having him back at 80% and just letting him ride out the rest of the season and come back healthy next year, I would rather him just sit out. But if he's 100%, I think it would be a huge lift for the defense, a huge lift for the team. And I'm not necessarily saying that that means that they could beat Baltimore with him, but it would certainly give them a much better chance with him than without him.
So with the Jamal Adams, with the sack record, I think he's so strong-willed and he wants that record. He told people to get that record, that he will get that. He only needs 2 more sacks to get that in 5 games. He almost had a sack by himself, in the last game. But I think what Jordan Jenkins came along in the sack, or whoever it was came along in the sack, so it counted as a half sack for him. So I think in some of these late games, like let's say the Bengals, or hopefully like the Dolphins the next week, where the Jets are hopefully in a comfortable lead, maybe Greg Williams will kind of try to help him out a little bit and blitz him a little bit more, which I think we saw, versus the Raiders. But also depends on the quarterback, how well the secondary is holding up, if he's able to chase the guy down from behind or what it may be. But at the end of the day, do I think he breaks it? I would say yes. I think he ends up around 9 sacks this season, which would be nice to see. In terms of why it took Greg Williams so long to utilize him, one, like you said, he likes to mix and match. And two, Jamal Adams, while being elite in the run game, he's still very, very good in the pass game. The Jets don't have a lot of guys who can cover, so he was being asked to cover more in the beginning of the season. That's something I pointed out multiple times on X's No Quick Hits when we were doing that, Scott, is he's being asked to cover more, and that's why people are saying, oh, well, he's not getting the stats, he's not getting the sacks, he's not getting all this stuff that I'm used to seeing. Yeah, because he's dropping, 20 yards down the field because he's being asked to play in deep zones and cover 3, cover 2, cover 4, whatever it may be. So with the limited talent in the secondary, he was kind of forced into coverage more than he probably should be, even though he still is very good in the pass game. He's just elite, top notch in the in the box, in the run game, blitzing, things like that. So he was kind of his hand was kind of forced there. In terms of C.J. Mosley, it depends on, I guess, where the Jets are seated. Listen, if the Jets are, because the AFC is obviously a weak conference. If the Jets are 6-7, they're 2 games or they're a game out of the wild card spot. And let's say if they finish the season 9-7, 8-8, they have a chance of making the playoffs. Then yeah, the Jets probably play C.J. Mosley. Maybe he can play, but at the same time, if they're 6-7, they're 2 games out. You have to clean the table, and all the other teams would have to lose. The Jets think it's a very low probability, then you probably don't play him because he's a guy who's here for many more years, because he's on the big contract that he's on. And obviously saying that he is, he makes a huge impact for the defense is an understatement. We saw just in the Bills game how much of an impact he made, 0 points through 3 quarters, and then when he left, the 17 points in about a quarter. So he's one of the best inside linebackers in the league, overall, both in coverage and in the run game. And he calls the defense. He's the brain of that defense when he's in there. So it would make a massive impact for this team to have him back. But I think it's all dependent upon, one, how he feels. You don't want to rush a player like that back. Like a Kevin Durant, obviously, it's a little bit different of a situation with just being 6-7 and not in the finals. But it's all situational on how he feels. But he makes a massive impact.
Joe, that's what I meant by mixing and matching in terms of Adams, is that he had to use him in other ways. And so he was kind of trying to find what he needed to do to get by on a week-to-week basis. And now Adams has obviously emerged to be a force as far as rushing off of the edge, which is crazy to think about. He is as dominant a rusher from that position as we've seen in a really, really long time. And there you go. Mailbag and game preview courtesy of Joe Blewett, who is back. Well, he's back very temporarily because he's going on a trip. But he'll be back again, and we'll talk more film. We'll talk more Jets, obviously. We'll answer more questions. Joe, I know that you're going to be gone in a couple days, but in the meantime, I'm sure that there are people that have some interesting questions to ask you on Twitter. They're not going to get as detailed an answer on Twitter as they would on a podcast. And as you said, you're going to ignore questions that you think are a waste of time. But if they do want to ask you some questions, where can they get a hold of you, whether it's Twitter, whether it's YouTube, whatever?
Yeah, well, like I said, we'll see what capacity I'm, you know, podcasting. Will I podcast? And I'm not sure. Will I do some more film reviews? Probably. I'm not really going to you know, root myself down into anything, but I definitely do miss the hardcore fans out there, the guys who listen to me every week and would comment every week, you know, the Gus Tunes and the Charmans and all those guys. So I'll definitely be back in some similar fashion. But yeah, I'm going to ignore the stupid questions. Now, if you're going to be an ass big, oh, Quinn Williams has two sacks. What do you think about that? Like, I'm not even going to answer it. I'm not going to acknowledge it if I just know you're not really asking the question. But yeah, it's Joe RB31. I didn't disappear off of the face of the earth. If you ask me about Mollett or any of these guys, bless Austin, I'll answer you. That's completely fine. I still like talking football. It's not like I just, you know, threw everything away. So that's where you can reach me. I'll be in contact with Scott, and I'm sure we'll podcast again, you know, before the season. And then with updates about that, I'll throw it out on Twitter. I'll throw it out to Scott. We'll see what happens in the future, though.
Go ahead and follow Joe on Twitter at JoeRB31. You can get a hold of him there if you want to ask him some more questions. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.